Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
Good morning and welcome to Racing Across America on a Saturday morning. I'm confused because usually I see myself in the monitor. Maybe the guys can. I'm looking at European racing right now. So I got momentarily confused, which is very easy. But good morning and welcome. There we go. Happy to see my smiling face there. hopefully you are too. After yesterday where I think overall it was a fun day. But boy, it ended in one headline I read said debacle, another one said fiasco. The situation in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Turf yesterday certainly has to be addressed, and I think maybe some protocols put in place to avoid that happening again. It was absolutely a worst-case scenario. If you aren't aware yesterday, everybody has to be aware. If you're watching this show, you have to be aware. The one-horse Modern Games jumped in the starting gate, and according to the veterinarian, hit his head. Then the two-horse Albuquerque starts to get worked up and winds up under the gate. But the assistant starter went around to the front, opened the gate for Modern Games, the one-horse, who went out. Well, what the CHRB, the California Horse Racing Board, explained was the vet then made a bad call on the one horse without having looked at the horse and thought the horse should be scratched given the scenario. We have a minute or so. Last night, CHRB Director Scott Chaney was in, I believe it was the Del Mar press box, along with the medical director, I believe from the CHRB. And they gave a statement and had a little press conference and answered some questions as well. But I just have about the first minute or so, which just kind of explains CHRB rules and what transpired yesterday to lead up to that situation where Modern Games ran for purse money only. So again, just about a minute or so from last night, Scott Chaney, director of the California Horse Racing Board.
Just a quick and dirty kind of assessment of what happened. After number one, Modern Games reared up and hit the back of the gate, number two, Albahar flipped over and became lodged underneath the starting gate. The scratch of number two was relayed to the stewards, and that horse was taken out of the wagering pools and appears uninjured. The veterinary staff then relayed a second scratch, number one, Modern Games, based on initial observation to the stewards, who also removed that horse from the wagering pools. After further discussion and observing number one, Modern Games, that horse was declared fit and racing sound, and that fact was relayed to the stewards, who pursuant to CHRB Rule 1974, allowed the horse to run for purse money only. The CHRB and Breeders' Cup are reviewing current veterinary and scratching procedures to ensure that this does not occur going forward. I'm Scott Chaney, Director of the California Horse Racing Board. Equine Medical Director, Dr. Jeff Balea. Happy to answer questions.
So again, that was last night. Obviously a statement had to be made by the folks in charge, and that was their statement. And it went on, there's maybe another 10 minutes or so of them answering some questions. But what happened was Modern Game rears up, the veterinarian said hit his head, and then the veterinarian who was behind the gate thought that Modern Games broke through on his own, which may have exacerbated the situation. That wasn't the case. The assistant starter, when everything started going haywire, opened the gate so Modern Games could go out as the two horse was getting worked up so that they both wouldn't get tangled up. When Modern Game, and at that point, as I say, from behind the gate, the veterinarian thought, oh, he reared up and hit himself, and then he hit himself as he forced the gate open. He calls the stewards and calls for a scratch and hasn't actually looked at the horse. So it was a premature call by the veterinarian. Subsequently, Modern Games comes back around the gate with the jockey on. The jockey says the horse is okay. They look, and the assistant starter explains, no, I opened the gate. He didn't push it open. So there's a consultation, and they decide, oh, the horse can run. But at that point, the CHRB rules say if there's a tote mistake that wasn't the fault of the owner or trainer, the horse can run, but for purse money only. But it was absolutely a worst-case scenario. because when the two scratches, legitimately scratches, because he was under the gate, so that was a legitimate scratch. There's no question there. But when the two scratches, the one becomes a heavy favorite. So everybody in pick bets who had used the two was going to move to the one. And so they all got zapped by the situation. Everybody who had the one got zapped by the situation. And that was because the one then wins the race. If the one run, if Modern Games runs eighth, this is a little sidebar story. So this was a worst-case scenario. It just fell into place that it couldn't have happened any more badly for the game and the players and everybody involved. But once it got, there was kind of a point of no return that when the vet made the call to the stewards, and the stewards then disseminated that, however they do to paramutual entities, you were past the point of no return. At that point, I was thinking last night, there's just no good scenario to mitigate once you get past that point. So, and then it's just, as I say, worst case scenario with Modern Games winding up winning the race. It was bizarre. I mean, I was watching the simulcast signal. I don't know if you could hear it on NBC, I'm assuming probably, but when the horse came under the line, the crowd booed. It was bizarre. I'll have to get in touch with Brian Addo, because I'm getting the feeling that the crowd at the track wasn't fully informed of what was going on, and really the television audience either. It wasn't until that explanation much later in the day from the CHRB that things kind of became clear as to what happened and how it transpired. But it just worked out as badly as it could have, given the scenario. So hopefully that doesn't take away from the performances in the day, because it was otherwise a nice day. Echo Zulu was very impressive. Christophe Clement gets his first Breeders' Cup win with Bobby Flay's Pizza Bianca, who ran well. Otherwise it was a pretty good day of racing. And Modern Games, that was a really nice performance. Corniche winning for Bob Baffert, I think, tosses a little wrinkle into the whole affair, because normally you'll look at the juvenile winner and start talking Kentucky Derby, but given this scenario, I don't know how that's going to play out. But again, just wound up in a weird situation with that juvenile turf and how that played out. And I think also it was hard to tell from the television signal, but they kept saying, it's getting dark here. I think they were under a little bit of pressure to make some decisions and make things happen in that juvenile turf because of that situation. But yeah, as I say, just could not have played out any more badly for the juvenile turf. But for folks who had Tis the Bomb, congratulations, you fell into it. For folks who had the one or the two in picks, I feel for you. It's just it was a bizarre, tough situation that shouldn't have happened. And again, I think they'll have to address that from the veterinarian side of things. That and Breeders' Cup weekend, there's an overabundance of caution, as perhaps there should be. But it just pulled the trigger a little early, and they'll have to kind of figure out, if that can be mitigated in the future. But anyway, I just wanted to show you what the statement was, the official statement from last night. We'll head to a break now. Coming up, the Saturday portion of our interview with Randy Moss, had him a couple of days ago, and yesterday we put in his comments on the Friday races. We'll come back from the break, and we'll have Randy talking about the Saturday races. Randy, of course, with the NBC broadcast team. A little bit later on, we'll be joined by Jeremy Plante from HorsePlayerNow.com. Countdown to the Crown. We'll get some of his thoughts on yesterday's action and coming up today as well. And then we'll kind of wrap things up a little bit early, because there's a 12 o'clock post time at Belmont today, so the NYRA pregame show is going to start a little early. But that's the game plan. Randy Moss after the break. A little bit later, a little conversation with Jeremy Plante, and then an early wrap-up to send it to NYRA. All of that right after this. Stay tuned.
Where's the best place to find your favorite teams, your favorite food, daily drink specials, and wagering on live horse racing? Legends Field Sports Bar, 711 Central Avenue, Albany. Get your game on day or night with 75 flat-screen TVs, tournament-style pool tables, a private banquet room, and live horse racing. So if someone asks you where's the best sports bar in the capital region, tell them Legends Field Sports Bar, inside the clubhouse racebook, 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
The Breeders' Cup World Championships have given us some of horse racing's biggest thrills and biggest payouts, like the $2.7 million Pick 6 payout back in 2003. With a long list of betting options, it's never taken so little to win so much. So don't miss your chance to share in Thoroughbred Racing's richest event, the Breeders' Cup. And be sure to go to CapitalOTBBet.com to wager and win.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Let's shift our attention now to Saturday, and we'll kind of work our way back. So let's start with the Breeders' Cup Classic. Guys in the control room can pull up, because I pulled up a couple of replays here. We'll watch Nix Go win the Lucas Classic back on October 2nd, and then we'll go back to the end of the Saratoga meet and watch Essential Quality win the Travers. And I'm dying to hear what your analysis is, because the question mark for me is what it is, I'm sure, for everybody. Does Nix Go just run them off their feet? Or, with all the other speed in this race, does Nix Go maybe get involved early? And does Essential Quality maybe have the opportunity to stalk and pounce?
Well, here's my opinion. Nix Go is the speed of the speed. I mean, yes, there's other speed in the race. You've got Medina Spirit, who shows speed. Hot Rod Charlie's got some speed. Art Collector's got some speed. But that's like saying, you know, there are a lot of good quarterbacks in the NFL, and then there's Tom Brady. You know, there's a lot of speed in the Classic, but then there's Nix Go. I mean, he's going to get clear. He's going to open up a clear early lead. Medina Spirit and Mike Smith, he's going to be, you know, he's going to be ridden, I think, in such a way, or excuse me, Mike Smith is on Art Collector, but Medina Spirit and John Velasquez are going to be in fairly close proximity, I think, of Nix Go, like maybe a length and a quarter, length and a half behind him. And we'll probably try to turn up the heat on Nix Go, maybe at the half mile pole going into the second turn, if he can get there. If Medina Spirit is good enough to actually get up to Nix Go, because they're going to be asking Nix Go to pick it up a little bit at about that point as well. So it's going to be a really interesting cat and mouse game between those two horses. The question I have about Nix Go is just simply not can he win at a mile and a quarter, because in the Whitney, he actually outran the speed horses early and then outfinished the closers late. You know, he sort of kicked it into another gear again the last eighth of a mile in the Whitney. So I think he can run a mile and a quarter. I think the question is just going to be, is he going to be quite as good at a mile and a quarter, especially if he gets a little bit of heat early from Medina Spirit, as he is at a mile and an eighth? I think that's the big question. Not, you know, he can, it just depends on how the race develops. If you say he can get a mile and a quarter, okay, let's say he's a 113 buyer horse at a mile and an eighth. Is he a 113 buyer horse at a mile and a quarter with a little pressure, or is he a 109 or a 110 buyer horse? It might just be that little subtle difference that could be the difference in the outcome of the race. The horse that I like in there, Seth, is Hot Rod Charlie.
Yeah.
And I think the key race to look at for Hot Rod Charlie is the Belmont Stakes. And people kind of have sort of forgotten a little bit about the Belmont Stakes. At the end of that Belmont Stakes, when Essential Quality ran down Hot Rod Charlie, and it wasn't easy, they battled, and Essential Quality edged away at the end, but the way Hot Rod Charlie was sent early, leaving the starting gate, going a mile and a half, ran really hot early fractions for the Belmont, pressured, and then still battled with Essential Quality the length of the stretch. We were all saying after the Belmont Stakes, Essential Quality won, but my God, what a hell of a race Hot Rod Charlie ran.
Yeah.
I came out of that race thinking Hot Rod Charlie was the best horse. So now we go forward. You know, he did nothing wrong in the Haskell. He got taken down. He did that wrong. But he ran a hell of a race. He comes back in the Pennsylvania Derby and runs a number that was big, that could maybe have been even bigger. ran a heck of a race in the Pennsylvania Derby. And he's so tactical that I think if Medina Spirit can put some heat on Nick's go, Hot Rod Charlie's probably going to be sitting third right behind him and is going to be in the garden spot. He and Art Collector are going to be just sitting right back there, you know, waiting. And you know, Hot Rod Charlie is adaptable and he's tactical, so he's got that advantage.
Yeah, and I'm really interested to see when they load in the gate what the odds are. I think John White probably has it right. Nick's go favorite, Essential Quality Nick's and Hot Rod Charlie right behind them. But coming out of that Pennsylvania Derby, that seemed like, you know, the social media and whatnot, a lot of people were thinking, oh, this is my Breeders' Cup Classic horse. So I'm really intrigued to see what the odds are when, as I say, they go into the gate for Hot Rod Charlie.
Yeah, and I think the bottom line, okay, there's Nick's go is Nick's go, okay? If we assume that Nick's go is going to be vulnerable in the last eighth of a mile, okay, he may not be. He may go wire to wire. He may just be too good. But if you want to bet on the basis that he's going to be a little vulnerable after maybe taking some pressure from Medina Spirit, then the question becomes this. Hot Rod Charlie is probably almost certainly going to get the jump on Essential Quality. Essential Quality is probably going to have to come around Hot Rod Charlie and pass him again, as he did in the Belmont Stakes. Except this time, Hot Rod Charlie's going to have a little bit more left in reserve than he did in the Belmont, because he's not going to be ridden as aggressively leaving the starting gate, and Hot Rod Charlie's going to get a slightly better trip than he did in the Belmont. So that's what I think that very well might be what it comes down to in the Breeders' Cup Classic.
Yeah, it is definitely a fun addition of the Classic, and a little bit earlier, fun edition of the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Want to get some thoughts there as well. We're going to pull up a replay from the Spinster at Keeneland. We're going to watch Letruski get it done. My personal opinion is she has a divisional honor sewn up, whatever happens come this weekend.
Yeah.
But it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out. You know, you mentioned Clairiere earlier, a horse I've liked all along, and I agree that Cotillion was a really nice effort. Malathat is interesting because hasn't been seen since the Alabama, but I guess that may be becoming the norm now. Saratoga is your last start before the Breeders' Cup for some of these big horses. She Dares the Devil, really intriguing as well. But as I say, Letruska kind of stands out to me in this division. I would love it if she just crowned herself properly winning this, but it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. What do you think of the Distaff?
Yeah, I agree with you that she's got the divisional honor sewn up, and if she happens to win the Distaff and you get a certain result in the Breeders' Cup Classic, then I think Letruska could even
right.
be Horse of the Year.
Yeah.
I think she'd have a lot of support for Horse of the Year. But they're not going to give it to her in the Distaff. I mean, she's going to have to earn it, and she's probably going to have to run much more aggressively early in the Distaff Saturday than she was forced to run early on in the Spinster when they just basically gifted her the early lead. You know, we had thought there might be a horse that might put some pressure on her. It said they were going to, and it just didn't transpire. And she was able to get away with a 47 4/2 mile and a 2.5 length lead. And those horses are not going to beat Letruska in that sort of situation. She's just a remarkable mare. I mean, she's won 17 out of 22. She's just done nothing wrong. But as you pointed out, there is some tough competition in here. She Dares the Devil is probably going to try to put some heat on Letruska and not let her get away with an easy early lead. Private Mission is on the inside of Letruska, who has, you know, really good early speed as well. She's probably the most likely to go after Letruska during the early part of the race, just because Private Mission's drawn in post position number one, and with Flavian Pratt, and we know Bob Baffert likes his speed. So it's going to be contentious, I think. And therefore, I think it's going to set up for a horse like Malathat, or maybe a horse like Clairiere, if she takes that big step forward that we're talking about. She's going to need to. But the only race that Malathat's lost on her form, she's 6-for-7. The only race she lost was in the Coaching Club American Oaks when she drew the rail, and the strategy in that race was to go to the lead, which in hindsight is probably not her best game. She was hounded all the way around the track. She still lost by only a head. She put away Clairiere through the length of the stretch, who made an early move herself, and nearly won that race at 1-5, and then came back and won the Alabama nicely. So a really good race. But I think given the way the race is likely to be run, I think Malathat's probably a better play than Letruska.
Yeah, and she certainly kind of, in the Alabama, showed that the coaching club, American Oaks, was a little bit of an aberration with the pace scenario and whatnot. I'm intrigued by her, certainly. All right, a little bit earlier, the Breeders' Cup Sprint, and one of the aforementioned stars of the weekend, Jackie's Warrior, Steve Asmussen, taking kind of a unique prep route, going over to Parks and winning the Gallant Bob, and one of those quote-unquote paid workout situations. But we were lucky enough up here in our neck of the woods to see Jackie's Warrior a couple of times up at Saratoga, looking very good. But I will say, I've heard it pronounced a couple of ways now, Dr. Shivel or Dr. Shivel, off the last race. That horse is very interesting as well. 3-for-3 also at Del Mar. Special Reserve for Mike Maker with the string of triple-digit buyers is intriguing. Aloha West off a couple of triple digits. Of course, Forenzi Fire, who a couple races back had the crazy race up at Saratoga that everybody remembers, trying to take the chomp out of Yao Pan, subsequently finished second in the Vosburgh behind Following Sea, who's back in here. So Jackie's Warrior is going to get all the buzz and all the action, but I think there's some interesting competition in the sprint.
There is. There's some interesting. It's a nice race. I just can't see Jackie's Warrior getting beat in here. I mean, I can see Letruska getting beat, you know, some of the other favorites I think could be, you know, like we talked about Jack Christopher, he could be vulnerable. But this one, I think, is just too good. I just can't see him beating Jackie's Warrior in here. He's getting better with every race. He's going in the right direction. His Woody Stevens was good. It wasn't great. The only race he's lost this year, it's sprinting. Then he was better in the Amsterdam. Then he won the Jerkins, although I thought Life is Good might have been the best horse that day, but he ran sensationally. And then the Gallant Bob was the best yet, you know. So the horse is really going in the right direction. But he's going to be too short of a – he's going to be 3-5. He's going to be too short of a price to play. So then it becomes who you're going to put with him. Dr. Shivel, that's apparently the way you say it. That, by the way, that's the real name for Mr. Freeze of Batman fame.
Oh,
I didn't know that. And I was a huge Batman fan. Mr. Freeze apparently is Dr. Shivel, but they just called him Mr. Freeze. So there you go.
Very good.
Who knew? You know, he's a nice horse. He'll close. To me, I think the best play might be Jackie's Warrior hooked up with Aloha West, because I think Jackie's Warrior will discourage enough of the early speed in the race that it'll help a horse like Aloha West to pick up the pieces late. And we've seen that a lot of times when you get heavy favorites that have speed like Jackie's Warrior. You just demoralize the other horses anywhere near him. And then a horse in good form with a good stretch kick that can sit back and make a big run can come up and pick up the pieces late. And I think that's what you might get out of Aloha West.
Yeah, very good, very good. The Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. Once again, I'm intrigued to hear your opinion, because this is another one of the horses that I think people are kind of looking at as potential singles on pick tickets and whatnot, and that's Life is Good. I'm taking a little pop against, you know, lost two races back to Jackie's Warrior, you know, no shame there, obviously, and then won the Kelso, and we're going to watch the stretch run to the Kelso here, won the Kelso pretty easily, but man, that was not a strong field by any means. So I don't have a big opinion against, but I thought Silver State is legitimate. I'm going to play around a little bit with Silver State. I think Ginobili on a big effort could be one to take a look at as well, having run well over Del Mar in the past. So I think there are some options. But again, I'm interested in your opinion. Are you for or against the strong favorite in here, Life is Good?
Look, if he's 2-5 or 3-5, which is probably going to be the case, then in a race that's going to be run the way it's likely to be run, you probably need to take a shot against him. There's a horse drawn directly to his inside that a lot of people aren't going to take a second look at, called Jasper Prince, and he's got no chance to win. But last year in the Breeders' Cup Sprint, his only race outside of Japan, we were looking at the race and trying to figure out, okay, who's going to go to the lead? Who's going to be the pace setter? How's it going to shape up? And we didn't even give Jasper Prince a look. You know, we knew he had some speed, but he blasted off away from there in the Breeders' Cup Sprint with 21-3, 44-3. Now, I don't know how he's going to be ridden. Who knows if he's going to be ridden the same way? But he's directly to the inside of Life is Good. And if you're looking for a horse to maybe soften up, Life Is Good during the early part of the race, you know, he or Ginobili have speed. So at 3-5, you know, maybe Life Is Good as a horse to try to take a shot against. They think he can sit second if necessary and be just as good. And I think he was the best horse when Jackie's Warrior beat him in the Allen Jerkins. But, you know, still, you're not going to make any money betting on a 3-5 shot. And I agree with you that Silver State and Ginobili would be the two most likely winners if Life Is Good does prove to be vulnerable. They're really the only two in there. Other two, I think, could have a shot. I don't think Snapper Sinclair is good enough or Strain Vengeance is not good enough. You've got the two Japanese horses who almost certainly aren't good enough. And then that leaves Silver State and Ginobili. You know, if you can work Life Is Good, you know, out of the exacta, I don't think you can work him out of the trifecta, but if you can get him out of the exacta, then you could have, you know, a hell of a payoff there between those two.
Yeah, or just you beat him in one of the pick bets, I think it inflates it up a little bit, because I think a lot of people will lean on him as maybe a single in there, as they will. And finally, we'll take a look at the Breeders' Cup Filly and Mare Sprint. Clearly, there will be a single for folks using the aforementioned Gamine. I'm taking a pop against her as well with Bella Sophia. And on my morning show up at Saratoga, I had Michael Dubb and Libby Imperio on the day before the test. And I was talking about Faith's House, the Child Care Association's new facility up at Saratoga, taking care of the backstretch kids. And so we talked a little bit about that. And then with Michael Dubb, I talked about some of his courses that were coming up. And the interview ended, we went to commercial, and Libby said, you know, I got kind of a nice horse tomorrow in the test. We probably should have touched on that one. The next day in the winner's circle, I said, hey, if you have one like this and I don't bring it up next year, kick me under the table, because Bella Sophia looked great there in the test. And I thought the follow-up against older horses in the Gallant Bloom was very good. Still lightly raced, maybe some upside potential. So, you know, it's a big ask to beat Gamine, but I may take a little pop with Bella Sophia.
I can totally understand that. I mean, as we said, on paper, Gamine is going to be probably shorter than 1-5. She's probably going to be 1-10, maybe even 1-20. Who knows? You know how people jump all over these favorites on big days, especially one with form like Gamine. And on paper, figures and everything like that, she certainly, you know, she certainly lays all over these. She'll control the pace, you know, which is the way she likes. So the race shape ought to be in her favor. But, I mean, you know, you sometimes, if you want to cash a nice ticket, you got to zig where everybody else is zagging. And everybody's going to be singling Gamine. You're right. I mean, she's going to be easily the most popular single on the card. And there's really only one other horse in the race, I think, that's got a chance to beat her, and that's Bella Sophia. So that might be a good opportunity just to say to yourself, look, you know, I mean, these aren't machines. Gamine is not guaranteed to run the same way in the Filly Mare Sprint as she's been running in most of her recent races, right? She tends to drift a little bit, tends to get out a little bit during a lot of her races. You know, maybe that's her undoing. Maybe Bella Sophia is a little bit better than people think. So I can totally see your thought about you know, swinging for the fences here and playing Bella Sophia where everybody else in the world is going to be singling Gamine.
Yeah, I think it's, as I say, it's a big ask, but Bella Sophia being lightly raced, you know, after the race, people may be saying, oh, the next superstar. So that's what I'll count on. We'll see how it works out. Again, it's a fun 2 days of racing. Go ahead.
Yeah, well, it's the difference, Seth, as you well know, and I know almost all your listeners know, it's the difference between picking and betting.
Yeah.
You know, picking, you would pick Gamine if you're just trying to get a good win percentage, right? If you're making your picks and you want to say that you pick six winners on Saturday. Okay. Well, then Gamine is the most likely percentage winner, but betting can be a completely different proposition.
Yeah, and there's no question about it. And there are those sentimental favorites that go off at 1-5, where it's a good, like a Latruska, and you are happy when they win, and it's a great story. But when you're walking up to the window, you're maybe looking for something a little bit different. And that's Bella Sophia race, that kind of a scenario. We didn't touch on any of the turf races, but I'll just quickly ask if you have anything maybe clever to toss out in one of the turf events.
Domestic Spending.
Okay.
Tarnawa's drawn outside. Tayona's drawn outside. Turnawa is, you know, probably the best horse in the race, but she comes off a pretty tough finish in the Arc, beaten second on a deep surface that, you know, had to be a little tiring. She's fairly lightly raced this year, so I don't know how much of a concern that is, but I know Dermot Weld is a little bit concerned about what he expects to be very firm turf at Del Mar, much more firm than what they got last year at Keeneland when they got a lot of rain. Earlier on Breeders' Cup weekend, it was more of a European-style firm to good last year than I think is going to be at Del Mar. So domestic spending is coming up the race the right way. Obviously, he's got the trainer in Chad Brown. I think he's going to be pretty tough.
Very good. Randy, always appreciate the conversation. I know it's a busy week, so appreciate your taking the time as well. Wish you and everybody good luck on the NBC broadcasts this Friday and Saturday, and we'll talk again in the future.
All right, Seth. Always great talking to you. Take care, bud.
Appreciate it. Randy Moss from NBC Sports. Welcome back. Thanks again to Randy Moss for taking the time. As I said, a busy week for him, certainly, and appreciate his taking the time and giving the opinions yesterday on the Friday card, today on the Saturday card. And now joining us live, as mentioned at the top of the program, Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown, and much, much more. Jeremy, good morning.
Hey, Seth, anything news-wise happening in the last 12 to 24?
Yeah, very good. And I'll get your opinion on that in a second. But as I was watching Randy there at the end, it dawned on me, you, for a long time, did notes and whatnot research for NBC. And I'm just wondering if you had any interaction with Bob Neumeier and any memories of him. And I got a bunch of texts yesterday, I guess, on the NBC broadcast. I was in here doing this. But on the NBC broadcast, they did a tribute to him and featured a picture of Newmy and me that Steve Bick had taken at Saratoga Handicapping Contest a few years ago. But I was, had the pleasure of knowing Bob Neumeier, nice guy, good handicapper. But again, as part of that NBC team, did you have any, memories of Bob Neumeier?
No, he was a great friend. Really one of the true genuine people in TV. Sometimes you run into people in TV who are in TV because they like me, themselves.
Yeah.
Newmy liked everybody else. And he had an unbelievable way of endearing himself to others. Everybody liked him. I recall if we did a show at Santa Anita, he loved the carving station as you leave the paddock area and come under the grandstand. And after a show, he'd stop and get you a carved sandwich, and it just... little things like that, but people on TV don't do that. So it's kind of, he was different in that respect. He was a really humble, good guy. I haven't shared this story with anybody yet, but I think I'm going to drop it on you. But Newmy used to keep this little journal diary with him all the time, a little attaché, with some pages to it and a little binder on the outside of it. And he'd always be writing little notes on it. And we'd be, TV production is not that glamorous, right? We're in like temporary trailers out in the parking lot. That's essentially the office for the week. But Newmy would always be sitting in there in one of those paneled trailers, and he'd be scribbling little notes in his book and everything like that. And I thought, man, this guy is meticulous. He is really like every note about every race that we're going on. I can't believe he's like documenting so much stuff. So one day he left his journal open by his workstation, and I happened to walk by and I looked and I was like, all right, I probably shouldn't be doing this, but I'm going to just kind of take a glance. I want to see what, because I deliver all the notes and the research and everything. So I'm thinking, like, what of my stuff is he, like, making notes about? I look down at the book, and it says, like, Knicks minus five, Celtics plus 220. It was all of his bets. It was his gambling journal. And so it was all of his sports bets. I mean, he was a true bettor's bettor, and that was Newmy in a nutshell. We got to become really good friends, and I worked with him from, 2000 to, probably until about 2 years ago was the last time that we did any work interactively together. But when I started Horse Player Now, 2008, 2009, in that area, he was one of those guys in the industry who just said, whatever I can do for you, let me know. Put my name on anything, put my picture anywhere. If having Bob Neumeier helps your brand at all, use me any way you can. And it opened some doors, because we would say, hey, we can do live chats. And our live chat hosts include Bob Neumeier, Kaiten Bradar, myself, Joe Christopheck back then. Just having his name to be lent to what we did really helped get us off the ground. And I knew he was a great friend. We won an award in 2013 at the Preakness, the Special Award of Merit for the infield activities that we had done over the years of teaching the fans how to bet at the Preakness and such. And Numi was one of the guys who came up with this accept award because I think he was part of the team, you know. And he was a handicapper in our Buzz Report for many, many years, and a great guy, just an absolute great guy. But, yeah, his journal, unfortunately, was not about the races that were coming up. It was all of his sports bets, and he kept meticulous notes on those, too.
That's great. I'm glad I asked you. Because, and as you were talking, it dawned on me, I was relating you and NBC, but I remembered you had done a lot of Horse Player Now stuff, too, so I'm glad I asked, and you tossed that story out there. Speaking of Horse Player Now, before we get into some of the Breeders' Cup yesterday and today, but if folks want to swing by horseplayernow.com, I'm assuming there are some Breeders' Cup products available.
Yeah, we've got our Buzz Report, which we put out Saturday throughout the course of the year. This is the last Saturday of the season. We take a little respite after Breeders' Cup. But, yeah, the Buzz Report's $10. It's two full cards every week, and this week we had two full cards. We're Breeders' Cup Friday and Breeders' Cup Saturday. So you still get all of the Saturday action. What I did this time was I took every horse in the Breeders' Cup and put my comments and notes about each one. So of the nine races today, every single Breeders' Cup horse entered. We've got notes on those horses, so you can check that out. And also the undercard races are handicapped as well. So Buzz Report, $10. 10% of it goes to the Thoroughbred Retirement Foundation. Oh, nice. That's not just a Breeders' Cup thing. We've been doing that for several years. So we try to give something back to the horses who have given to us.
Excellent. And the address is right there on the screen, horseplayernow.com. All right, let's kind of review before we preview, and let's go back to yesterday and get some of your thoughts. And again, you had the great intro to the interview of any news over the past day. Yeah, things wound up yesterday. One headline I read said debacle, one said fiasco. But overall, hopefully the day settles down and people can remember. Twilight Gleaming gets Wesley Ward his third straight turf Breeders' Cup turf sprint, juvenile turf sprint. Echo Zulu looked phenomenal. Pizza Bianca gets the first Breeders' Cup win for Christophe Clement. And then things kind of changed up a little bit from talking to you in the past. I'm sure it wasn't a savory result in the juvenile with Corniche winning, because normally at this time of year, we'd be talking about, hey, how's the juvenile winner going to head to the Kentucky Derby? But there's a little bit of a problem there with Baffert being the trainer. And as I say, we've talked to you about the Baffert situation before. And then the modern game situation, I think everybody, I said earlier, there was a point of no return in the decision-making past which there was no good result. And it was a worst-case scenario with that horse was going to be the big favorite after the scratch of Elbaher. Modern Games was going to be the favorite and then wins the race. If the horse runs eighth, it's a shrug of the shoulders. But the horse winning, it was absolutely the worst-case scenario. So, again, there was good racing, good results, and then things wound up as stories that maybe racing didn't want or need. But your impressions of Friday Breeders' Cup?
Yeah, you know, I was under the weather yesterday. I'm feeling a little bit better this morning. So I was pretty worn out last night, and I did not see the press conference video until this morning of Scott Chaney and the attending veterinarian. You had posted it, and I actually had saw it off of your Twitter feed. And after watching that video, it gives you some clarity of what actually happened, but it doesn't give a good explanation of why it happened, you know? And so why in the haste of a horse popping through the gate would you scratch without a vet examination first? There's no excuse for that. Yeah. There's absolutely no excuse to scratch that horse before there's a vet examination. And we talk about this era of transparency and protecting the horse and everything like that. There should have been a camera right up in the face of the veterinarian who's, like, looking in every eyeball and nostril and everything he can and feeling the chest to see if the horse broke through the gate, if he feels like he's got any problems, any winces to, you know, like contact, that kind of thing like that. I mean, we should have gotten, like, a great Animal Planet lesson in veterinary care there. It was the perfect learning opportunity to show what great care they do take of these horses.
Yeah.
Instead, a haphazard scratch before a horse is even examined, it makes no sense at all. You think we would have learned our lesson from Barbaro in 2006 that something like this wouldn't happen again with veterinary examinations at the starting gate? And it's a different situation. They allowed Barbaro to run, but he was never examined thoroughly by the vet. he was put back in the starting gate and then broke down a couple steps later. You know, so if the same thing would have happened with this horse, they would have had the exact same problem. So I don't understand it. We haven't learned from our lessons in big races. You know, the Breeders' Cup's 38 years old, but it has a couple big stains. You got the 6-6 scandal back at Arlington, in what, 2002 that was, I believe, at Arlington Park. You had the Life at 10 thing around 2010, 2011-ish at Churchill Downs, you know, when Jockey interviewed before the race, saying, I don't think she's warming up right, and then she goes trails around the back of the field as a well-bet entrant in the distaff that year at Churchill. And now this, it's just... all three are unnecessary, you know. They should be taken care of, and we should have a better sport in that regard. You know, I've been around 27 years in the industry, and I've been in a lot of meetings with a lot of different people and a lot of boards, a lot of departments. I've consulted with a lot of companies, so I've been privy to a lot of conversations that other people haven't. I can tell you this. I'm the kind of person that tries to game plan for what could go wrong, you know.
Yeah.
You play devil's advocate, and you say, what could go wrong? Let's fix it before it gets there. And I can tell you that I've been called a wet blanket. I've been called a pessimist. I've been basically told, don't worry about it until after it happens, over and over and over again, through various companies, you know. And that is the thought process of the racing industry. Nobody's really paying attention, so let's not address it until after the fact. And then stuff like this happens. There should be policy in place. There's no way you can scratch a horse without a vet examination. That should be rule number one. You just don't get on the radio, and if the stewards hear that, they say, did you do the thorough vet examination? It's a one-question answer. And then they say, well, hang on, let me check them. But, you know, they're talking last night about how it was getting dark. They were already delayed. If we're coming down to whether or not Mother Nature's getting dark or not on what we can do the right or wrong thing, then get the damn schedule right.
Yeah.
You know, don't be making post times at 5:30, 5:40 on November the 5th. At a track with no lights. These are like all preventable things. That's the thing. It's not like some remarkably weird, odd, incredibly, no way we could have thought this would ever happen thing happened. You know?
Yeah.
A horse broke through the starting gate and they just decided to scratch him willy-nilly. Then they come back and examine him after the fact and say, well, maybe he's okay, so he can run. The mistake wasn't the how the bets were going to be paid out afterwards and things like that, because there was a rule book in place for that, okay? If they took him out of the pool, they can't put him back in the pool. The rule says he can run for purse money only. If you want to hide behind, we did things procedurally right. From that point forward, they did, but they put themselves in that spot. They scratched the horse prematurely without having a plan in place. It's inexcusable, and everybody knows it's inexcusable, and we'll see how the public reacts to it. You know, I mean, the Breeders' Cup is as big and better than ever in terms of finances go. And we talked about this isn't the first scandal they've had or the first big black eye. So they probably power through this one as well. But at some point, horse players will stand up and not take it anymore, you know. And we'll see if this is the case. That was the long-winded answer to my impressions on Friday. I think you might have wanted more of an on-track answer. But I can't really give you a lot of warm and fuzzies about the on-track because Corniche won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile. And we're going to court over that, Seth. I mean, yeah. This is if I write Countdown to the Crown next year, which I ended last season with a – I'm not sure where I'm going with this series anymore because I don't like the route that things have gone and with the Baffert situation and everything is there. I don't want to spend next year writing 22 weeks about court findings. And that's where we're going to end up. If Churchill stands behind their ban of Bob Baffert, you know darn well he's going to go try to get an injunction put in there, and then it's going to get delayed and delayed and delayed, and they're going to delay on purpose. So we get to the first Saturday in May, and the courts are going to say, how can you deny Bob Baffert? He has not had his fair due process yet. Due process hasn't played out. And we know due process in America takes years to play out if lawyers want it to take years to play out. So, you know, I would say right now, if you had to set odds on it, and let's just say Corniche makes it, right? We don't know if it's Corniche or some other horse. It's hard to project 5 months ahead. But Bob Baffert with a court injunction is probably 4 to 5 to run any horse in the Kentucky Derby this year. To think that the band is going to hold up in court, it may hold up, but it might take 5 years to decide. He's got him, you know. what happened in New York is precedent. And so then when you take it to a court in Kentucky, they're going to say, well, New York held it up too, that Naira couldn't keep him from the Saratoga meet. So we're going to be dealing with this as a non-racing, non-on-track issue. You know, this is going to be court TV, and that's disgusting. I don't want to cover the Derby trail based on what some judge in a circuit court in Kentucky decides.
Yeah, and that the Kentucky Derby has dragged out this long is just unfortunate. But, yeah, once it gets away from the racetrack and into the courts, that's kind of the way it plays out, unfortunately. And so we'll see how it goes moving forward. But that the decision hasn't been made one way or the other. And, again, that opens things up for the Baffert team as well, that, well, really no decision has been made. So how can you be doing this banning and whatnot? But, again, we'll see how that all plays out. But let's turn the page to today and hope for happier results, although Medina Spirit in the Classic puts that Baffert spin on this race as well. But the Classic for me comes down to, does Knicks Go run them off their feet, or with the abundance of speed in the race, does he get softened up a little bit? I'm going to tilt towards Essential Quality to maybe grind him down in the stretch. But give me your thoughts on today's Breeders' Cup Classic.
Well, we come to the same conclusion. I've also come to Essential Quality, and I think Hot Rod Charlie, the other three-year-old, I think it's a particularly good three-year-old crop. They've held up well. There's no question about the mile and a quarter and beyond for Hot Rod Charlie or Essential Quality. And I think they're high-end horses that don't need the lead. And in this case, I think both Medina Spirit and Knicks Go are both need the lead types. Art Collector's a real X factor in this race in terms of the pace, because we know this, if there's more than two in a speed duel, things really ratchet up and make it more difficult. If Art Collector's sent up into this mix, then three of them going to the front, Medina Spirit, Knicks Go, it could get really hot. Knicks Go won the mile last year, right? The mile and a quarter is a question. Yes, he won the race, the Pegasus World Cup, in a mile and an eighth at Gulfstream Park. And again, with track configuration and things like that, that set up for him nicely there to get the mile and an eighth. This doesn't seem like a mile and a quarter that favors Knicks Go. He's going to have to win this on ability that we haven't necessarily seen on paper to get the mile and a quarter. Perhaps he can. Brad Cox's horse tend to re-break and run as well in the stretch as anybody. I'm taking Essential Quality, one from Brad Cox. So obviously I know that trainer can get the horse to get the trip, can get this particular horse to get the trip. That's a big question mark with Knicks Go. The pace, you know, do you think Knicks Go is just faster than Medina Spirit and just faster than Art Collector and he sends and the others can't keep up? That's potentially true. But the one real key thing, and I was talking with Jeff Siegel about this on our podcast that we do, the First Call podcast, earlier this week. Look at the Saudi Cup. The recipe for beating Knicks Go that day was Charlatan going after it hard. Now, they both paid the price, and Mishriff ended up winning the race. But Bob Baffert said then, and he'll probably say again later today, the only way you're beating Knicks Go is to go hammer him. Go to the front and go after him. He already has the blueprint. He showed how to soften up and beat Knicks Go. His horse, Charlatan, wasn't good enough to do it in the Saudi Cup. Does he think Medina Spirit's good enough to do it off of his big win in the Awesome Again and the way he has trained? He's not a very good horse in the morning typically, but of the last month or two, he's been a different horse. So I think Baffert's got Medina Spirit exactly the way he wants him. Read into that however you want, but I think he's going to the lead. I will not be surprised if Medina Spirit is in front of Knicks Go. I think he's going to attack him and attack him hard. And if Knicks Go isn't forced to the front or doesn't break particularly brilliant, At worst, I think he's going to be a half length off of him right on his outside and lay it into him. I mean, look at the post positions. Medina Spirit's going to be out in the 8 hole. Knicks Go in the 5. He gets the chance to lay right on his flank there. And I think those two are going to go after it hard. So that does, to me, set it up for the horses who don't need the lead. I don't like big closers in a race like this. And really, I don't think any of the quote-unquote big closers are major threats in this race. You know, they just don't look talented enough. Maybe Tripoli from off the pace can get a piece of it because of the pace. I think he's a long shot to consider. Just horse for course, he ran well at a mile and a quarter, ran his best race of his career in the Pacific Classic. So if you're trying to get a horse in at some odds underneath as a closer, I think Tripoli might be the consideration. But I think on the win end, Essential Quality, Hot Rod Charlie, they get that kind of first run over the big three speed horses going into the far turn. and one of them straightens out for home and is able to wear down, I think, of the speed horses in here. But it's a really interesting classic. There's good dynamics of older horses, younger horses, horses who are developing, like Art Collector getting better now at four than he was at three. You got the miler trying to go the mile and a quarter. And then you've got the really good three-year-olds trying to figure out which one of them is absolutely best. I think Essential Quality has been the best, and I think will be the best today.
Yeah, I like the thought of using that Saudi Cup as a little bit of a blueprint. I think you landed on something there. Just before we let you go, let's get some quick thoughts on the other highlight late in the card, the Breeders' Cup Turf. I'm going to take a little pop with Rock Emperor. Now, has to validate what we saw last time in the Turf Classic, but I think if he does, he becomes very interesting as a Chad Brown runner at a price. Acclimate got a little buzz from Mike Welch, the clocker, taking a look at his works and said, if you haven't looked at this one, maybe consider Acclimate. I think you get a price there as well. Tarnawa is the defending champion, but certainly the post position draw didn't do her any favors. What are your thoughts in the Turf?
It's not my specialty, I'll be honest. You know, when it comes to international racing, I'm kind of like Joe Fan in that respect. It, Breeders' Cup pre-entries come out, and I start to do my homework. You know, I go through, I watch replays. I try to get as much of race previews and reviews of all the Racing Post and Sporting Life and websites like that that cover the international racing and try to gather the best I can on the European. If there is an American that I like in the Turf division, I'll tend to lean that direction because that's what I know best. But there's nobody in the American Turf division that really jumps off the page to me. With domestic spending and United both out, I don't think United was good enough to win anyway in his current form. He's a solid horse. But, you know, domestic spending would have been the American to really consider in here. With him scratched, it probably just falls to the Europeans in here. And then it becomes, you know, like five of them, right? Sisfahan, Broom, Tarnawa, Tiona, I think, is a three-year-old filly of interest. Walton Street, you know, second time. In North America after coming and running in Canada last time. I kind of think those horses are at the top of the list. If there is an American, maybe Gufo would be the one to consider. You know, 24 hours ago, I would have never bet the horse because Christophe Clément was 0 for 40 in the Breeders' Cup, right? He got off of that Ziggy and got the victory yesterday with Pizza Bianca and the Juvenile Phillies Turf, and good for him. You know, he's one of the best trainers in America, but when you see something, you know, the Breeders' Cup's 38 years old, and the guy has never won a race in the Breeders' Cup, and he's 0 for 40. It's hard to take a short price on something like that. And if you had Pizza Bianco yesterday, I think he ended up somewhere around $20, so that wasn't too bad. You don't take him at 3-4-1, you know, when a guy's 0 for 40, but at 9-1, worth the gamble. Everything is price sensitive in what we do here, betting the horses. But you know that Clément won yesterday doesn't, you know, infuse Gufo with any more talent or ability. But as a horse player, it gives you a little bit of an infusion and confidence that he can prepare a horse to win a race on this stage because we just saw him do it yesterday. And maybe your price sensitivity comes down a little bit more, right? If before you were saying, I want $20 or more on a Clément horse because he's never done it, now that he's done it, maybe you'll take 15 on one of them, you know? And so if Gufo's 6-7-1, maybe he's still a bet for you. But I tend to think the Europeans are going to rule here. But what happens in the Breeders' Cup is, like, the Euro we're all looking for rarely wins, right? I mean, it goes back to Dancing Brave in the early days, and I'm aging myself in the Breeders' Cup. But, you know, like, the European hardly ever comes over here and wins. It's usually one of the second, third type Europeans that you're kind of looking for, the conduits and horses like that that have had success here. So Sisfahan interests me. Tiona, the three-year-old filly, you know, she ran against Snowfall in the pre-Vermeil and was able to beat her, and Snowfall seemed to be unbeatable to that point. So I think that's kind of a telltale sign there that I think Tiona could run a big race. Of course, Tarnawa, there's no knock on the defending champ. The one thing about her, like I said, we tend not to see the results of the expected Europeans run as well. That's usually because we're at the end of their season, right? And it's an afterthought. They've already gotten through Champions Day or the Arc, and now they're just coming here. So they may have a great resume, but they weren't really trained to come up to this point. Like last year, Tarnawa's had a very light 3-4 race campaign and comes up this year, just like last, where she's not over the top. So if there is an expected European who is actually going to run through expectations, it could be a filly like her, a mare like her, because she was not over the top coming into this one.
Yeah, it is a very interesting addition of the Breeders' Cup turf, as you say, with a lot of the Euros in there. Again, I'm going to take a little pop with Rock Emperor, though, because I think I'm going to get a pro. And again, relying on how price sensitive you are, if you get that double digits on the Chad Brown runner coming off the big win, I'll go in that direction. Jeremy, as always, appreciate the conversation. Again, folks can stop by horseplayernow.com for a closer look at the Breeders' Cup as well. Again, appreciate the conversation. We'll talk again.
As always, take care and good luck, everybody.
Appreciate it. Jeremy Plonk, horseplayernow.com, Countdown to the Crown, and much, much more. All right, I'm going to wrap it up because the pregame at NYRA is already going. Again, they have an early noon post time at NYRA. I will say, earlier when I was talking about the modern game situation, I said there's an overabundance of caution at the Breeders' Cup, and deservedly so. And somebody tweeted to me, and it's valid. They said there shouldn't be an overabundance of safety. Every race should be safe. Couldn't agree more. And I think a lot of tracks now have upped their safety, and I think you see that more and more now at tracks with those vets that are behind the gate and jockeys who are willing to say, you know, my horse didn't warm up, take a look. And maybe overabundance of caution, maybe I worded that wrong. I think there's just a different level of scrutiny at the Breeders' Cup, which is warranted for the horse's safety, because I think it's harder maybe for a jockey to say, you know, the fifth race on a Wednesday, a jock can warm up a horse and it doesn't feel good. Hey, will you take a look? And then the horse is a gate scratch. This is the one race that the connections have been pointing to all year long. There's $1 million up for grabs. Jockeys may be a little bit, you know, they're going to need that support from that team of vets a little more. So again, I think it's just a different level of scrutiny. It should be safe at every track, every day. But I think there is deservedly a different level of scrutiny for the safety of the horse at the Breeders' Cup. So, yeah, as I say, maybe I worded that badly, because I totally agree. There should be a high level of safety at each track every day. But I just think it is a little bit different. It's different just practically speaking in that there's a team of veterinarians there looking. But, again, I think that gives a little backup when a decision is made to scratch a horse at the gate that can then can be conveyed to connections who have planned for that race all year long. All right, I'm going to wrap it up for Racing Across America on Breeders' Cup Saturday. Should be a very fun day. Hey, good luck to our syndicate teams. We have two Breeders' Cup syndicate teams. Hope you guys knock it out of the park this afternoon. I'll be here in the clubhouse racebook. If folks swing by, you want some of my thoughts during the afternoon, stop on by and say hello. Should be a lot of fun here at the clubhouse racebook on Breeders' Cup Saturday. Going to wrap it up, send it down to New York so you can hear a little bit about their card this afternoon. I said it's a 12 noon post time at Belmont. At Del Mar, we are looking at 10:15 in the morning out there. That's 11, 12, 1:15 our time for the kickoff at Del Mar on this Breeders' Cup Saturday afternoon. All right, going to wrap it up for Racing Across America on this Saturday morning. Thanks for tuning in. Good luck this afternoon. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.